Hello and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Captain Phillips, and joining me on this endeavor into the stars is Mike the Birdman Dodd and Alex.
That's right. We are here on the USS Future Imperfect, though I was a lieutenant commander, but I didn't pay my dues, and I'm not going to.
You're a commander. You know, you kind of align yourself a little more with the Maquis than anything, so...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Be like a Maquis captain, I guess. Pirate captain.
Renegades, man.
Yeah, I'm like Sisko. I'm there begrudgingly as a thorn.
And I'm going to co-opt an idea that originally we talked about for an RPG, and I'm going to be the captain of a garbage ship. like a sanitary, like a janitor ship. Like, because you know they've got to have like ship cleaners or something, right?
So, well, they did that in like Voyager. There was a ship that used to haul dangerous like radiation things and throw them in the stars. Yep. So
it's Star Trek ship cleaners.
That's what I mean. Like literally, like we have all the
stuff. Scrubs.
Like it's a boutique ship because you can replicate everything. But some people just really want lavender scented soap. So that's what I am. I'm like a merchant peddler and cleaning service.
Put a lotion in the basket.
Basically, like a Molly maid, only in space.
Interesting. Okay, so our topic today is Star Trek Picard. And I believe in the first episode, or the previous episode, we covered the first three of the season so far. Am I correct?
I believe so, yes.
I believe so. So we've had three more episodes. And we're on the cusp of another one to air.
Yep. So these ones, stuff actually happened. The plot is actually moving forward, and boy, have I got opinions.
So the three episodes that aired were Absolute Candor and Stardust City Rag, both directed by Jonathan Frakes, and The Impossible Box.
The ones that were directed by Frakes are definitely the best. Mm-hmm. Absolute Candor, the best part of that was Romulan Samurai.
Yep.
You know what it looks like? Well, first of all, it's like Australian. It's like an Australian Chinese Shaw Brothers 1970s kung fu look is what he's got going on. Like,
yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? You know how they used to have it? It's like, I'm, you know, the general inspector of the police force. And it would be a dude in like 1800s Chinese traditional garb with the hair like that and a samurai sword.
I feel like it should have been dubbed, like with the mouth flaps not going with the vocals. And
but he's like an Aussie,
and then like Bruce Lee type of thing, like coming in and just like karate chops the Romulans.
It actually had a lot of like a samurai space western feel to that episode.
I don't remember a lot about it. See, that's the thing I'm finding with Picard, and I'm going to be the like Debbie Downer for this series. I'm not finding a lot of things memorable, with the exception of a few key scenes, which we'll talk about in presumably just a couple of moments.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you in that regard. Absolute Candor, while, you know, there is a little bit of dialogue that goes back and forth between people.
And it was a filler episode.
It was definitely a filler. And you get Picard that beams down and picks up this Romulan kid, Elnor, who's now an adult and joins him on this quest, you know, more or less because it was a doomed mission from the start, which is the only reason why the people from that group actually help anybody, is because it's like, it's a suicide mission.
Do you know what the best thing I can do to describe that episode? It really is the closest to a space western to like a Firefly type episode would be. It's literally old sheriff rolls into a frontier western town that used to be this great place he remembers, and now it's all run down to shit. And he finds, you know, the little boy that used to hang out at the malt shop, who now happens to be, you know, this strapping young lad and he basically recruits him to be his deputy to try to clean up the old West, but nobody wants him there anymore.
It's like Walking Tall.
And it's, yeah. And actually a similar plot to, like a lot of those classic, Magnificent Seven sort of thing, right? Like it's a doomed mission, but he's recruiting people who, you know, would never normally, you know, recruit or go to do anything for, you know, for the sake of good, unless, there's a, you know, a one person that can rally them all together sort of thing. That's what he's trying to do, and only works for one person.
Yep. And then at the end, you finally get someone helping destroy the classic Romulan warbird, and that Seven of Nine.
Which felt a little bit weird because they shoo in a lot of dialogue. And my main problem with her randomly showing up, as much as I love her, I love the Seven of Nine character, they just kind of tell us what she's been up to in the last like 15 plus years since Voyager's ended, how she's helping defend like outposts in the former neutral zone. It's basically like a new Maquis sort of thing, bases that, like, there's been so many changes to the political landscape, and the Federation stretched too thin. The Romulan Star Empire effectively is screwed up.
Yeah.
Someone's got to keep the peace. And it just seems really out of character for her. Like, the writers just wanted to put in a classic Trek character. Like, people like her. She's cool. That seems like more like a Tuvok thing to me.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you there, or like a Chakotay thing. But it's kind of funny that they have her there, and then she's all of a sudden, you know, she's totally normal for the most part, you know, not
Borg-like at all.
No, and well, which is a little strange, but, you know, she's had a lot of time to adjust and change over the years, too, like Picard has. Not everybody goes to go back like Picard and instantly is human again.
Yeah, Picard's explanation was obviously he wasn't assimilated for long, right? But what she was, yeah,
like
young.
like a matter of days, yeah.
So I get they're doing it because she's Borg, but the real reason why they worked her into the plot is she still looks good. So many other people from that show have aged poorly.
All of the TNG, DS9, and Voyager cast have pretty much aged badly.
I would say Riker still looks all right. Chakotay or Robert Beltran doesn't look great. Garrett Wong still looks okay. Tim Russ still looks okay. Kate Mulgrew looks fine, but she's aged. She's just aged. I don't know. Robert Duncan McNeil, not so much.
No, he's, yeah. The doctor.
I'd say Picardo's aged pretty well.
Yeah.
Picardo was old back then, so it doesn't really.
Yeah. But yeah, like
and even if you go,
both
like,
guys age well.
When if you look at DS9, well, some of them have aged okay, but like, the ones that one of the ones that aged the best, like Jadzia Dax, she dies in the show, so they can't bring her back, and there'd be no reason to bring her. She didn't know these people. So, like, would it have made more sense for it to have been, like, Worf?
Yeah, although they've openly said, don't hold your breath for a Michael Dorn cameo. There's rumors there'll be a season two bit.
But yeah, at least not this season for sure.
I would be happy if he came back for season two, like, and he was a prominent part of the cast, like as in Picard's basically lost this entire cast or something, you know, and has to
happen.
and you know, it's because it's giant. It's basically a giant suicide run. And I could see Worf doing it out of honor for Picard, much like All Good Things. Because again, he's got a similar degenerative disease in his brain. So it's at some point he's going to become a basically an invalid for whoever ends up having to deal with him.
Now, they did mention in the official novelization or some kind of a tie-in comic where Worf commanded the Enterprise in between the Romulan destruction of the planet or whatever up to Picard. Like, he was in charge because Picard wanted to trust him to be in charge, because Riker had the Titan. I think that was the name of his ship.
Yep, it was.
So that's at least good. They gave something Worf to do in canon. Like, hey, you get the Enterprise now. That's cool. Plus, he'd be the first Klingon commanding officer
of the Enterprise.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Which you notice, like, and, you know, maybe jumping forward, but there's not been any talk of the Enterprise at all.
Nope. In
the show. So, and it's not like they ever decommissioned. The idea is there's always an Enterprise. So,
which, you know, I'm kind of glad, you know what, they're going to save that for the season finale, just like Star Trek Discovery did in season one.
I have a feeling they're going to have the Enterprise with Worf rescue Picard and his crew.
Probably. if I had to guess. Okay,
and if you do that, would you end the show with he rescues Picard and his crew and puts him under arrest?
Maybe.
That'd be a hell of a cliffhanger.
That would be a good cliffhanger, but it would also be good in the sense that maybe Worf is doing it because he has to, not because he wants to, but he's also going to get to the bottom of it at the same time.
Like using it basically, get him aboard and then find a way to get him off and mutiny the whole thing. Like,
yes. Yeah. I could definitely see it working out that way. Because Worf is very loyal and he has honor, whereas Starfleet does not at this point. Yeah, so yeah.
You have him follow the rules, follow everything. And then, you know, basically have Picard have a conversation with him and challenge him based on, have you ever known me to be a disloyal person or somebody who would do something dishonorable? And like, if he's like, no, then he's like, then why do you think I'm doing this? And then have him basically have Worf look into what's going on.
Well, and Worf, once he finds out that this is basically Data's daughter, would in, you know, for the camaraderie aspect, would probably side with Picard anyway. So but then we get to the Stardust City episode, kind of circling back into that. Yeah. And that one is crazy because not only do they have different actors for Ichab and Maddox, but they
isn't that the Ichab,
it's totally different actor?
Different really actor.
Yep, they didn't even ask like him it. Back because they knew what they were going to do with him. So
that's so disrespectful.
They picked a guy that looks similar, but he's definitely not the same guy. But I don't think the original guy acts anymore.
Well, he did Star Trek he did Renegades a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So I think he's not busy. It's just they just didn't want to do it.
Yeah. Well, or they didn't ask him. And the same thing could have been said for Ichab, knowing that they were going to kill him off. And it was kind of, you know, a little bit gory and weird to see, you know,
it was unfucking necessary is what it was. And the reason I say that is you took a fairly good secondary character who had a good story arc throughout Voyager in its later seasons. And you saw the relationship develop between Ichab and Seven of Nine. You saw the humanization of her come from being an ex-Borg to becoming more human, to learning that compassion, that loving relationship, to forming, for lack of a better description, her own collective. And then she randomly executes him out of mercy. That's not the Seven of Nine I know.
Well, and she did it only because he was suffering and they'd already scavenged parts off of him.
It seemed so unnecessarily brutal. And the part that I didn't like about it, and I'm sure we'll get into it, is this isn't Star Trek that I remember, and that's a problem. This seemed like 24 with phaser rifles. And that's
You're pretty much right, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's not what I expected from the show. Is it a bold new direction? Oh, yes. And I said, when we first started doing these recaps, you want to impress me, Picard? Up the stakes. Make things happen. Yeah. Kill a beloved character. Stick with it. And they did. But at the same time, maybe don't go Quentin Tarantino on us with
it. And they totally did later in the episode when they're all dressed in their, you know, undercover
disguises. Garb. Yeah.
And Seven, more or less is, you know, could I have some of these phaser rifles? And then she explodes.
John Woo's this crap.
Yeah, she like explodes the lady and you just see like red powder go everywhere, and then she just starts taking everybody out. So yeah, I have a feeling that she'll come back towards the end of the season, but if at all.
They won't kill her off screen because Jerry Ryan's too popular, Seven of Nine's too popular a character to do that to.
Oh, but they'll probably bring her back only because she's in all the promotional materials.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you want to do something dramatic and something that'll not only break your heart but make you, oh no, you know, you want to kill her off? Have her be reassimilated and then request mercy kills and then not have it happen. She gets assimilated into the Borg cube and then you have to blow the cube up.
Yeah, that'd be pretty brutal. And that would be an interesting conclusion to her story arc.
Yeah. Or she gets assimilated back into the collective and becomes a queen. Loses her identity.
Wouldn't that be something?
Well, what's funny about that is in Star Trek Online, they recently had an episode where they had that happen.
Oh.
Because they have Michael Burnham and because there's some alien from the original series that has them testing, you know, their resolve in different scenarios. And so you have to fight, you know, all these different aliens that you've played throughout the entire game. And they more or less have Seven of Nine and Michael Burnham working with your crew. And it's like the modern day Seven of Nine from Star Trek Picard. And she inserts nanites in something, and it unfortunately alters part of the Borg or control or something with the timeline. And it recreates a clone of Seven, but she becomes the Borg Queen. And it's just, it's insane how it like plays out in the storyline for that. But yeah, I could definitely see that going down in the show.
I think one of my biggest problems with Stardust City Reg, it's how they treated Seven. Like, again, they tell us she's done all these things and how she's changed, right? But we're just given a throwaway line of dialogue. It's less than 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
That should have been a scene. That should have been like 5 minutes. That should have been a, let's cut the commercial, but here's a scene. Show us what happened. And you notice how they didn't mention Chakotay?
Nope.
You know, a lot of this, they weren't sure how this show was going to do, and it has a lower budget than Discovery does. Found that out later.
Which is surprising, because
it's not when you look at the CG. There's not a whole lot in space. They built a few sets. The CG from when they go to the planet in that the second episode we're talking about here looks pretty darn bad. It looks like a video game.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when you compare that to any CG that was done in Discovery Season 1, especially Season 2, it's night and day.
Oh, yeah. But I almost prefer it in a sense because it's kind of... I'm almost kind of getting like this... like the second trilogy of like Star Wars, like the main... You know, your Empire Strikes Back and, you know, the Return of the Jedi where things are just kind of run down and everything's kind of just crap. Yeah.
But I don't know, like the holographic, when they're approaching the city and they have the holographic ads and that, if this had been done in Discovery, it would have looked better because the holographic parts in that look better. So,
yeah, that's, you know what true. I mean?
It's a little, I feel like they were testing the waters. They just weren't sure if they should dump a ton of money into this. And then they renew it for, what is it, 2 seasons they've given it now?
I think so.
It's renewed. I know they're shooting season 2 now.
I think they renewed it for the third.
They did.
So yeah, and Discovery was renewed through seasons 3, 4, and 5,
which is insane because 3 has yet to air, and yeah.
So there, it's basically this show has done well enough for them to renew the other shows.
My guess is this is CBS All Access's attempt to solidify subscription numbers. This is their must-see event television because they're
using Star Trek as the catalyst. It's the Star Trek universe now, and now they're actually starting to pull their content from everywhere else and kind of pull it all back under their own hood. Although there's going to be some kind of a change now that they're merged with like CBS and Viacom are merged. Mm-hmm. Because there's going to be a new streaming platform because of like all the Paramount content and all of the CBS stuff. So I'm not really sure how that's going down. But there's talks that they're going to fold CBS All Access into something else.
It's too many damn streaming apps. It's a pain in the ass.
I agree with you.
I mean, CBS All Access, I wouldn't pay for it because thankfully we get the stuff on broadcast. Plus we get Blu-rays Canada, for review anyway.
We also do not get Star Trek on CBS All Access in Canada. That's why it's only $3.99 a month.
Yeah, we get Star Trek through Crave and on Netflix.
Yeah, and see, the other place that they do it is Amazon Prime and the rest of the world. And the unfortunate part is the CBS All Access app overall sucks, and it's got some lag issues and there's some other problems with it. Like it's in stereo. It doesn't pick up where you left off. Like if you have to, you know, go back. I mean, and I tried it when Picard came out initially again, like tried it during that time, and it was still having issues.
The quality is better, honestly, if you're outside of Canada and the States. those that get it on Prime get it in 4K HDR surround sound.
That's because Amazon doesn't spare expense.
Yeah, which is funny because like even here the Crave app doesn't have HDR support. It doesn't
which
even
is
have
so strange.
It doesn't have anything above 1080p, and it barely. I don't think it does surround either.
It doesn't.
So the only way to do it is if you catch it either live on broadcast TV with the commercials here, and that will only do 1080i, or live outside the North America and watch it in 1080p or 4K with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
But to get back to the episode, I mean, this episode, despite the problems I have with it, I think is the most entertained I've been. Like when Picard comes down, there's a bunch of Easter eggs hidden in Freeport or whatever the hell it's called.
Free Cloud.
There's Mott's Barbershop. Evidently, Quark has licensed his bar, so there's a franchise now.
That's funny.
There's just all these little hidden Easter eggs in there that are kind of fun.
I'll have to go back and watch that because I didn't catch any of that. Although I did like the fact that they brought Maddox back.
Yep.
I'm a little disappointed it wasn't the same actor, but I like what they were able to do with him. I just wish that they would have let him stick around a little bit longer.
Yeah. I also don't know if I care for the twist that Allison Pill just executes him.
Yeah, Jurati. Yeah, where she kind of murders him, and the EMH is like, "What are you doing? Your heart rate's up." And she's like, "Turn off EMH." And then she just
it's probably that she doesn't really have anything like as far as like they don't have anything on her like, "Oh, you know, we can kill the rest of your family" or anything. It's probably that they made up some lie, showed her something that she wasn't supposed to know
freaked
about
her out.
And freaked her out, and she's doing this because they're like, you got to save the universe by doing this.
Yeah, so, that's a pretty good theory.
Big problem. I have a theory that she could also be an android.
Maybe. But the big problem, yeah, maybe, very possible. The big problem I have, though, with this whole thing, the second the EMH ever reactivates again, it should immediately be reporting it, the incident. To
Rios or whatever, yeah.
And to Picard, yeah.
Plus, ship's internal sensors would have seen this.
She didn't purge the logs or anything.
Says,
"Go away."
And the other. Well, and then they more or less just like it was just a passing thought, like, "Oh, Bruce died." You know, nothing else. Like they don't even like really.
La di da, his heart stopped. Sorry,
they're like his heart stopped. He just didn't have it in him, and then they just move on. Like nothing ever happened. Like, oh, we're searching for Maddox for the first five episodes. We get him. He tells us what we want, and then that's just jettison his body in space.
Who are you? I'm plot convenient. Time to die.
It would have been more cool if that wasn't Maddox and it was actually an android itself.
I mean, part of my problem with this show is the writing is inconsistent. The idea, I think the grand idea is cool. I really do. The actors are great when they are given something to do, but each episode has cool moments. But most of the time, I'm just like, can something fucking happen?
There's problem is also there's some poor casting choices on like Allison Pill does not fit the show.
No,
whatsoever. She makes it feel like a comedy with her being in it.
Yeah, because normally that's what she's in.
She doesn't have any gravitas. Like,
I think she would work if you gave her a season to grow. But to drop her into the role of an instant murderer, you're right. It does kill her because you look at something like Robert Picardo, who has gravitas but can act funny. Allison Pill can act serious when she needs to, but you need to build her up to that.
She doesn't suit the surroundings or the other actors.
She looks too young and doesn't really fit the aesthetic that they're going for, which the rest of them are all like grizzled and old and like disgruntled at Starfleet. And so there's really not any real concern there as far as her character is concerned.
Even the other guy that's I guess a little bit younger is the captain who I always forget his name, so I'm going to...
Rios.
Okay, yeah. So he basically, I guess he's like Mexican or Brazilian Han Solo is basically what he's going for.
Yeah, he's like Discount Captain Mal, but not as cool.
Like he he's a younger guy, but he suits the atmosphere of the show. Maybe not suits Starfleet, but like the issue I have is, look, with Alison Pill and some of the other even supporting actors that are showing up in it, it seems, I don't know, something about the casting seems odd or seems off.
Like Elnor even seems weird to me.
He seems like somebody who would fit better in Firefly.
Yeah.
Than he would fit.
So would Alison Pill.
Exactly. Like I don't know. It's just something odd about the way that they're being directed. I
feel like
TNG and shows of that ilk generally used to cast people that had traditional stage acting.
I think so too, but the other thing,
didn't do that for this.
I think this series, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like they're channeling Star Trek Renegades before it got crapped on and told, oh, you can't call it Star Trek, but it's Renegades. But it almost feels like Renegades to me, like in a sense, because they're fighting against, you know, Starfleet and you know, the tyranny and the insurrection going on.
It feels like what they should have done with this show, like the pacing. I think it's the pacing that's weird. You know, people think, oh, it's so slow, and then we have these fast bursts. I almost feel like this show shouldn't have had 10 episodes. It maybe should have had 22 or 26 like they used to have.
At least 13. Then
basically every other episode, you dive and do a backstory for one of the characters. And then plot in between.
It needs time to simmer. It needs time to cook. I mean, when you look at a show like, say, Doctor Who, for example, there's a season-long arc. You can still have filler episodes, but something always happens to move something in the background. Pieces are always moving. Here in Picard, with 10 episodes, you're dealing with a truncated episode time, so you're having to cram a lot in. Not a lot happens, despite the fact that things should be moving at a pretty pace.
Do you know what it is, actually, that I think I noticed the most? They're maintaining the episode length of a traditional TV show, about 44 minutes, when they shouldn't have to be constrained by that. If you look at Discovery,
well, they are broadcasting.
Yeah, but so was
in Canada.
Yeah, in Canada, Discovery, the episodes were like 52 minutes. They had less commercials on regular TV than normal, so they had about 5 or 6 minutes longer to dive into little things that they needed to.
Depending on the episode.
Yeah, some episodes were like 42, some episodes were 50, some episodes were an hour. Like, they shouldn't be constrained, but every episode here has been basically the same length.
Maybe they did it to be safe on the season one, and maybe they'll flesh it out more in season two and kind of take a gamble with it.
Yeah, because something just seems off with the pacing. Like, and it's not a matter of the director's, you know, problems, because they've all been pretty good. I almost feel like...
I think it's a writer's room problem.
We have too many different subplots going at the same time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, which I feel like is kind of hindering.
Like they wrote a story in one day, and they're like, how do we fill the rest?
Yeah, and I feel like that's how they hooked Patrick Stewart, was like, all right, this is our general idea. And then they're like, crap, we got him on here now. Now we got to figure out what to do with it. And so now you have like the whole Borg disassembling, you know, the XBs, and then you have, you know, the Romulans, you know, running the Borg ship. And then you have, you know, the organization above the Tel Shiar that's hiding in Starfleet in plain sight. And then you have the whole android plot, and then you have Picard's, you know, rescue mission concept, and then all these broken Starfleet officers or ex Starfleet officers. And so you have so many different things going on. It gets a little much.
They also haven't mentioned how Picard was sick since the second episode. That should be addressed at some point.
I think they'll do that with Riker and Troy involved.
Maybe, yeah, you're probably right.
Because Troy will read, you know, what's wrong, and he'll be like, well, you know, remember that time back, and, you know, all good things were...
Yeah, like, in the sixth episode, The Impossible Box, I think that had the most cohesive plot, but it clipped along so fast. But it also had some of the coolest moments, although I did laugh hysterically with Borg Magic Door.
Oh, when they opened up the Stargate in the middle of the Borg cube?
Yeah, I just about died laughing.
I was like, oh, convenient plot device. How do we get out of the middle of a Borg cube? Oh, the Queen has a hidden room here. Oh, let's jump on the Stargate and take us, you know, to where we need to go.
Which, get this, has a theoretical maximum range of 40,000 light years. You're telling me this thing can can transport halfway across the fucking Delta Quadrant? Bite my ass.
It's like Star Trek Into Darkness. Really, like, oh, we went from Earth to Kronos.
I was hoping they were going to walk in, and then we were going to get, like not just Stargate. I was hoping we were going to get, like, a Sliders reference of them going through the portal. Because, to me, I was like, what? Okay, the Borg Queen has this. So what they're telling you is, oh, the Queen's probably still alive. She's transported herself across the galaxy.
Although they probably have backup Queens because one was killed in First Contact, and the other one was killed in
Endgame.
But Endgame. I mean, they're like, oh, so we just reconfigured this cube to get to where we need to go, or to get to the Queen's, you know, chamber. And by the way, she has a transporter thing here. But, you know, there's no Queen in here. Well, because she's probably gone through the portal. You know what I mean? Like, if that's all it takes, well, why couldn't they just beam right back in and take over?
Did you notice on the Borg cube they had the one Borg that looked like a Romulan / like quasi Picard type thing down there at one point that they kind of hinted over and then just kind of left it alone?
One thing I will say about this episode is I like how they're giving some of the XBs some close kind of shots. You can see where their Borg implants used to be, and even in an earlier episode, like Hugh, and you see where they're peeling off the implant, you see the raw flesh underneath. As someone who's had significant medical trauma, that's pretty accurate.
It's also very clear, like, more so than ever, they're basically trying to compare it to, like, Nazi Germany internment camps. Like, these are the free Jews, and look at what they've gone through. And mixing that with some modern,
and then they had the reconstructive technology, you know, that they were rebuilding their faces and things.
That's what I mean. Like, oh, they rebuild as best they can. It's like, but you see a lot of them where they're not rebuilt 100%. And it's like, looks like having money like Picard really paid off because he has no remnants of anything.
Yeah. Well, plus he was only assimilated for a couple of days. So, but still, your point does still stand. I mean, one of the things, because you did hit on a very interesting point there where you're comparing it to Nazi Germany, this show wants to be as intelligent as the original series and TNG. The problem is it's not. This show wants to be groundbreaking, but it's not. Same thing with Discovery. I mean, as much as I want to love this show, I do. I love Captain Picard. I love Seven of Nine. I love the world they inhabit. This is the gritty Star Trek reboot I've always asked for, but I don't think I want it. Well, if that makes any sense.
I'm looking at the writers, and one of the head writers, the guy who's directing actually this next episode, it's a director from, like, they used to get people that did specifically sci-fi or something of that fair to do it, but it's like Sleepy Hollow, Criminal Minds, Limitless, SWAT. They're all just like broadcast regular TV shows. Somebody who doesn't necessarily have a vested interest.
Yeah, you notice that the first episode has five writers.
Basically, they're saying that because it was whoever sat in the writer's room and brainstormed the first episode.
Then other episodes, multiple episodes, the second and the third have dual writers. Riker and Troy have dual writers.
Well, and let's see here. Teleplay by Akiva Goldman. So that's the showrunner. Let's see what this person has done. I know the name. So, wrote Batman Forever. Great. Wrote Batman and Robin.
Barf.
Great. Wrote the Lost in Space movie. Great. Wrote Beautiful Mind, though. Won Best Academy Award for Best Screenplay.
The rest of it's garbage.
Yeah, the iRobot movie's garbage, Cinderella Man, Da Vinci Code, I Am Legend, Angels and Demons.
Da Vinci Code was all right. It was
give me a break.
For an adapted screenplay.
The Divergent series, Insurgent. That's the movie that tanked that series so bad they couldn't get the final movie made. The Fifth Wave, Rings.
I feel like the problem, too.
Transformers Last Night.
Okay, I feel like part of the problem, too, is the writers are all people our age or younger.
Or this person who's old.
Yeah, or they're so old, they're out of touch. And so, like, I feel like had they... And this is where I feel like the Orville kind of succeeds, is the fact that most of their old writers and producers jump ship over there because Seth MacFarlane got him. And then so they've had very strong storylines, even though they're one-offs like TNG. The overarching changes in the personalities and the storyline do add on to each other. They're just not as, they're just more subtle.
So we basically got the B team.
Yeah,
basically. And the B team's writers on Star Trek and the A team is on, yeah, on the Orville.
Yeah, 100%. The other two writers, there's Kirsten Beyer, I'm looking, who wrote a bunch of the novelizations in the 90s. So, but the last two writers that were on that first episode that are maybe written one other episode since, I believe Kirsten Beyer and Michael Chabon, they seem to only be there in the writer's room for like reference. I don't think they're really writing much.
Well, Kirsten Beyer
consulting.
Well, Kirsten Beyer, she's one of the, you know, ones that's one of the staff writers and executive story editors for Discovery, but is also like a supervising producer, quote yeah, unquote, creator/creator on Picard.
Well, she, yeah,
but it's, all she's done is start the new Star Trek universe.
She wrote the Voyager novels, Fusion, Distant Shores, Full Circle, Unworthy, Children of the Storm, Eternal Tide, Protectors, Acts of Contrition, Atonement, A Pocket Full of Lies, Architects of Infinity, and To Lose the Earth, which has not been released yet. But, and let's just reference these. These are Voyager books, but they've all been published since 2005. They weren't during the original run.
So she has the chops to write, but you have to wonder what's making it to the screen.
Yeah, as far as actual writing, it's Short Treks, Discovery, and Picard. That's it. No other television writer.
Yeah, that's all she's got.
And Michael Chabon, well, I know that name.
Michael that name Chabon sounds
very familiar.
He's actually writing, he's working on a Mask movie and Visionaries movie. But he's also, he did a series called Unbelievable, which was like, he did like an episode of it. He did a screenplay for John Carter. He did Spider-Man 2, the one with Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Okay. Looking, so that's not terrible.
But that's it. Like, yeah. That's it until now.
He's written books.
Yeah, but like, as far as writing for television and movies, maybe three properties in 25 years.
Yeah. And Akiva Goldsmith, he just rubs me wrong. So, like, I don't generally like anything that guy comes out with. But
I mean, I think part of the reason Picard is as quote unquote is successful is the nostalgia factor. Mm-hmm. And
we watch it because of Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. And because now we're trying to bring in the Borg and make them all cool and bad guys. And they kind of, pardon the phrasing, they blew their load early by using Brent Spiner in the first episode. Now we're bringing Riker and Troy in. They string you along just enough every few episodes. Here's a classic character. It's not a reunion show, though. Understand that. It's a cameo, and that's important to keep you interested. Just the show, like I said just a few moments ago, I want to love it, but I don't. And every week, I get excited for a few moments, a few heartbeats of, wow, that was really cool. And then I get Magic Door or Icheb being tortured to death, or Seven of Nine becoming a straight up murderer.
And you know what? It's still a better show than Discovery.
So yeah,
with all of us complaining, you know, it's still a better show than Discovery has been. The only thing that stopped me from completely stopping watching season two was when they brought in Pike.
Yeah,
yeah, actually, he was the only saving grace for that show.
Here's the thing: I care more about Picard's characters, but I like Discover, actually, hold on. Let me phrase that backwards. Okay. I like Discovery's characters, but I like Picard's story better. Like, I like some of the characters on Discovery. I like Tilly. I like Stamets. I like Saru. I don't like Burnham that much because I think she's OP, but whatever. With Picard, I like Picard. But for the story, other than the overarching plot, We said just 10, 15 minutes ago, there's so many different subplots. Well, what the hell's going on?
Well, here, just to compare quickly before we go into more of the episode, I'm looking at the Orville and the writers. Seth MacFarlane's written about 50% of the episodes himself. But he's also been known to be a Next Generation super fan forever.
Well, so, and he also wrote his own fan film back in the day, yeah, when he was going through school. And then he scripted it and did all this, you know, the stuff for it. And it's even for a fan thing that was like a couple minutes long, it was not bad at all.
And okay, one of the other writers slash producers of The Orville is David A. Goodman. If you go through his credits here, working on Family Guy, obviously working with him since, but was the producer on 43 episodes of Enterprise, wrote 5 of the episodes, so was an executive producer on it. Then you, so that's one person working, you know, in his stable of writers. Then let's go over to some other people on that list.
But the thing is Seth MacFarlane also has a lot of friends in a lot of places that want to work with him.
He is powerful. When he wants to be, he's not stupid. When he's passionate, he genuinely cares. And I think that's the difference. Whereas the Picard showrunners and the writers, outside of a few small exceptions, it's just another gig.
And that and he, you can tell he loves Star Trek. For one, he used to get all the actors back for cameos on Family Guy periodically. And then the fact that the Star Trek actors want to be a part of the Orville. And
which is funny. It's an intentionally funny Star Trek, which I'd have no, basically it's what the Orville is. And I feel like parts of Picard are being unintentionally funny.
Yeah.
As evidenced by Magic Door.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like it, what would you be in favor if, say, they took the universe away from Kurtzman and gave it to Seth MacFarlane?
Oh, Christ. Yes, in a heartbeat.
I at this point, I'd be happy if they gave it back to like Rick Berman.
Rick Berman.
honestly. Look, yeah.
Other episodes that have been on the Orville have been produced and written by Brandon Braga, you know, from Enterprise. I think maybe did Braga do Voyager at all?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah, he did.
So here are the other, and we talked last time about how there's a lot of directors that have done episodes, but here are the writers and producers that are working on the Orville. I already talked about one. So there's also Andre Bormanis, wrote 7 episodes of Voyager, 23 episodes of Enterprise. And then what else we hear is an executive producer and science consultant on the Orville. And Joe Manosky, let's see this person here, on the Orville is a co-executive producer, produced 1 episode of Discovery, was the executive producer, was it a producer of 100 episodes of Voyager and 26 episodes of Next Gen. And also wrote 37 episodes of Voyager, 5 episodes of Deep Space Nine, and 33 episodes of Next Gen. And that's the 5 people or so in the writer's room at the Orville.
And in so Star that's Trek, why it's so way too many cooks in the kitchen.
That's why there's nothing tonally consistent. Like, and I think that's the problem. Picard suffers from a massive identity problem. It's got all the people you love, but not doing the things you expect.
They have literally nobody there, even consulting, that has written for them before.
Their lore problem is out of this world. Like, I'm friends, like I've mentioned before, who's like a Star Trek person who's affiliated with the IP, and they've expressed some frustration to me, and I don't disagree with them.
In the second episode we're talking about here, or is it Absolute Candor, when the Bird of Prey shows up, the scale wrong. It's the wrong size compared to the ships. Majorly, like, hugely wrong. It, like, even for somebody who's not, like, I'm not a super geek that has to know the exact scale of everything, it just looks wrong.
It is.
Yeah.
It's the wrong size.
Yeah. And that's something that I one thing I will give like the Abrams movies and even Discovery, when they render their ships, they actually render them to scale based on the drawings. So if the ship is supposed to be 500 meters long, it's 500 meters long rendered in real time. So it's scaled 1-to-1 in the universe. In this, it seems like they're just putting them to scale to the size that they're showing up on screen. You know what I mean? Like, let's put a ship that needs to be this big to look that good in this frame. Not that it has to make sense. So even Discovery gets that right. But that's where I was talking about the budget being kind of off here. It doesn't feel like they have anybody working from a technical side going, no, that doesn't really work.
Yeah, like there's just, like, we've ragged on Picard pretty hard. Yeah.
That, no, I still like it, though. That's
I still like it, and I'll still watch it.
I'm watching it only because I want to know what happens next. So it's got me engaged on a curiosity level, but honestly, it's a part of my Thursday mornings. And I don't say that with any degree of enthusiasm. And that bothers me because go ahead. Yeah,
after you watch like this coming episode that comes up, after you watch it, please, you know, I'll send you the first couple episodes or watch them. I think you might even have them of the Orville. Just give the first few episodes a watch and see if you can compare and contrast the feeling you get from it.
Yeah, I will do that before next future Imperfect Record.
Yeah. And at this point, we have 4 episodes remaining of the season before we're back to Discovery Zone. But
oh joy.
Yeah, oh joy. 900 years in the future the only saving grace they're going to have for that, if they get any kind of familiarity, is because they talked about bringing the Trill in, is they're going to have Dax probably come back.
That'd be cool.
Now, do you notice how we've talked all this time now, right? You notice we haven't talked anything about 50% of the plot? We haven't even talked about like Soji at all or anything happening with her, because it's not interesting. It doesn't matter.
No.
It sounds cool until you read into it.
She's a plot device, and they're chasing this plot device.
I feel like, oh, so why was she cast? Why was the youngest looking Romulan cast in the history of Romulans being on screen? Because they wanted to have people they could make look like they're having sex for 15-year-olds to watch. Like, it feels like they're just there to advertise in posters. They have
pretty
no
much
real point.
Pretty much. Else.
Like, the entire idea of, I'm going to have sex with her to unlock her secrets. I'm like,
really? Yeah,
oh, he's going to unlock her secrets. Bounch, bounch.
Yeah. And like the incestual relationship with his sister being like, I'm giving you one more week. Why doesn't she just extract it now?
Hold the disruptor to her friggin' head and say, and give me what I need to know, or you die.
Oh, she's going
to
activate and we won't know where the... Yeah. Yeah, you will. You'll find like there's ways out of that. It felt like they're writing themselves into corners.
I mean, that's the problem, as we've said with Picard multiple times during this episode. It's a cool overarching idea, but you don't care how you freaking get there.
And did you notice too that they tried to, once they got the information out of her, you know, and she sees herself as a doll and, you know, and all this other stuff, you know, being created, or whether it was her or her sister or whatever. And then Narek, the male Romulan, decides to dump whatever that stuff is, which kind of reminds me of Nemesis, where they had the Thetheron thing.
I was hoping it was going to do that to her.
Same so here. Much. I thought so that would have been cool.
Like, she'd be like, and then turn to dust.
Yeah. Well, and I thought they were going to go that route, and then like she got hit with the red particles, but nothing happened, which was kind of strange, because like, and she just started like pounding the crap out of the floor until she went through it.
Because she has plot armor.
I laughed. Yeah. So hard,
and I'm like, at how, and I'm like, she should have been damaged from that red dust, but nothing happened.
Their idea of fast motion is skipping every 2 frames, so that it's this jerky, fake-looking punching the ground.
See, like I thought that was just me.
No, I saw it too. It was kind of off to me.
It would have made more sense for her to do, instead of jackhammer, stupid-looking, unrealistic punches, to just do what Data did and just punch really hard once or twice.
Well, there were scenes where Data just like, you know, Worf is trying with all his might, and then Data just goes whop once, and then the door falls down.
Yeah, like it didn't. And the idea of it, they're kind of shots that don't work in sci-fi. They work in like kung fu movies. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't make sense. The action direction is kind of weird in this.
Yeah, I'm also, not a huge fan of the writing.
She falls through the floor, hits nothing, and falls like directly in front of where she's supposed to go,
and they're like, oh, convenience. Picard can't run anymore, so we need to have things magically appear in front of him.
The one thing I will say, we talked about things we didn't like. What I did like is
Q.
Yeah, you know what I did like also is the discovery that every time she talks to her mother, the program puts her to sleep.
Yeah, and, I thought that was kind of clever, actually.
How she discovers that she's a robot is good. Everything else in that episode was like,
Yeah.
Like I said, there are occasional moments of being clever, but they're just enough to say, well, this series could be so much cooler. Oh.
Well, and I liked where Picard was cycling through his computer system and saw the pictures of the Borg and, you know, what Hugh looked like now and his Locutus, and then they kind of superimposed the image over himself.
Yeah, that was nice.
And then
one of the former Borg recognized him too.
Freaked out. Locutus.
How the hell do you know me? I was just submitted for like 2 days.
Yeah. Well, it'd still be in the hive mind, but no, it was kind of funny too, because like Picard like almost fell on the XBs, like grabbed him, and he was like, no, they're trying to save you so you don't go overboard, you know. And I guess he did the ad lib for the improv of hugging Picard, which was going around on Twitter the other day.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know.
That scene wasn't written in there, or like their little banter back and forth. Like they both kind of naturally just threw that in there.
The last time he saw him, if I remember correctly, didn't he like disown the Enterprise and hate them and leave?
He did initially, and then Picard, after Hugh took down Lore. Hugh was complaining to Picard about it, and Picard says, you know, I think that they have a good leader here, you know, and referring to Hugh, and kind of empowered him and then left.
That's what it was. Okay. That's what, like season 7?
Yeah.
No, 6. 6.
Okay.
No, that was like very first episode of season 7.
Are you sure? I thought Descent 1 and 2 two-parter. Was like, yeah, two-parter. Okay. You're right. Yeah. You're right.
I just watched it.
Because yeah, I was like, I could have sworn, like, because it's been a long time since I've seen every episode, but yeah, it just seems. Do you notice something too? This universe seems rather empty.
Like, there's nobody else in it. People. There's no other Starfleet ships. There's nothing. Like,
there's literally, they've not encountered a single Starfleet vessel in the
or any other one.
Yeah, anything else? There has been 3 ships total. Off model sized bird of prey, a little shuttle ship that gets destroyed, and them,
and the Borg cube,
and the Borg cube, and like a couple times you see like the Romulan ships landing on it, but like there's literally nothing for the entire Alpha Quadrant but that. There's no other space stations. There's no, like they don't even take the chance to like have like a picture on a view screen showing their map and showing where all the star bases are. Like they don't pull up anything. Like whenever they're like finding a route or finding a place in, they don't show anything on the screen like they used to.
Yeah, the space is just, well, it would be remarkably empty, but the universe doesn't feel very lived in.
Yeah. Well, if the Federation is supposed to be bigger than it's ever been, why are there no ships?
Yeah, considering they've had 15 years to rebuild since the Dominion and the Borg, they've had time.
Also, why do none of the ships have the tech that was on Voyager? Wouldn't that have been integrated?
Yeah, you would think so. But then again, they might claim, oh, it violates some temporal prime directive bullshit or something. It would be plot convenience that it doesn't happen, because if every ship had those quantum torpedoes or whatever the hell transphasic and a blade of armor, the Borg would be like, dead.
Well, like the armor, yeah, but like they also had, didn't they have even faster?
They had like transwarp coils or something like that.
That would allow them to go through
transwarp something.
Basically, you could go through wormholes and shit that you couldn't normally do.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
so,
but like, there's nothing. Like, there's not even a starbase.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice if Picard had walked onto, I don't know, Deep Space 12 or something, and just walked around for 5 minutes and met somebody. You're right. Like, show me a Nebula class vessel. Show me an Akira class.
What would have been cool is having them.
They didn't even give him quarters on the ship. They're just reusing the same set of his office over and over and over again.
Like, yeah, there's that too.
Have 2 sets. They have his office, and then they have the bridge, and the rest is like little tiny shots that they do on a green screen.
I hate that bridge so much.
I hate it too.
It has no personality.
Well, plus it's all hologram.
Yeah, like that bothers me. I mean, like part of the appeal to me of Star Trek, or this is going to sound weird, this comes from the set designer part of my brain in the art department, is Star Trek is essentially a sub Marine television show. It deals with a command section on a vessel. The Enterprise in the original series had personality. Every Star Trek command center has had personality. What do we have here? Four or five people sitting in lawn chairs. Half the names you can't remember. The only reason I remember any of the people's Picard's names is because I hear them so often, but I can't tell you anything really about them.
And I laugh. Well, the one's called Elrond, so all I can think of is Scientology.
Elnor.
Or, yeah, whatever. Same thing.
And then Raffi's the only one that I care about. And Rios.
Yeah, like, but
if you look at the set, and the idea is, I guess they wanted to have like, ooh, flashy touch button screens. No, because now it's just a black set with nothing on it. Like there's no dedicated consoles.
Because ultimately, if the power goes out on those ships, you can't do anything. There's no manual controls. If it's all touch screen and holograms, you're in some trouble, dude.
They also, you notice, like, they've been flying. They don't have any weapons. They don't seem to have, like, everything's controlled by the captain. Why do they need the other seats?
Yeah, there's like a con station, presumably what's science or sensors, and whatever Allison Pill does.
Other thing? Well, she doesn't
she doesn't do
hangs out in the back.
She kills people.
She like plays soccer and it's like it or basketball or something stupid. And then weirdly like does like high fives with people for no reason. Like
that's the future, man.
But
you're telling me the fist bump has died out.
The weirdest thing in the entire ship, though, is how uncomfortable all the seats look.
Yeah.
These are supposed to be long, like, rides. You're flying for hours. Look how comfortable every seat was. They look more uncomfortable than the seats in the original show.
They're basically DX racer chairs in space.
Which are not, yeah. Like, if you want comfortable chairs, look at everything in every other show. Actually, if you want to see how, like, a good episode is written, have you guys seen that What We Left Behind documentary, the DS9 one?
I've seen about half of it so far.
Okay, you know how,
I've like, not seen it yet.
Partway through each, they have the original writer's room sit down, and they go, how would we make an opening episode for a season 8 20 years later? And they actually show how they brainstorm. And over the course of one day in the office, they have one of the best ideas for a show I've ever seen. And they're
going to give Sisko a new starship and bring him back.
Well, they literally, like, they write it as they go. So, like, you watch a few chapters of each. Like, it's a two-hour documentary. And by the end of it, they've then jumped in and showed you storyboarded and had it, like, animated sort of, like, with storyboards, how they would do it. And that single episode that these veteran writers wrote in one day is better than anything that's happened so far. And all, like, you wouldn't even need to, like, do much other than fill in the individual dialogues. But, like, the actual story plot is better. I'm like, these guys did it when they weren't even being paid for it. They sat down, ate a bunch of pizzas, and wrote on the board to try to show people how they used to write an episode 25 years ago. And it was better than anything done now. So I was like, how can they just not hire people like that? I mean, like, Ron Moore has gone on to make a whole bunch of successful shows like Battlestar Galactica. And actually, that's what this feels like. Hey, Battlestar Galactica was really popular. Let's make that show. And that's exactly what they did with Stargate. And that's why they killed the Stargate franchise when they went, let's make it younger and hipper and make it brooding. And we'll make Stargate Universe. And it lasts two seasons and gets canceled. And this seems to be the exact same formula. Except with old people.
Yeah. I swear to God, if Kiefer Sutherland shows up as a Starfleet Jack Bauer, I'm done. I'm turning it off right now, then and there.
What if Donald Sutherland shows up as, like, a Borg?
If he showed up Borg as some grizzled Starfleet Admiral, I'm like, now I am intrigued.
Well, then it would just be like Into Darkness with the RoboCop thing.
I laughed so hard in the theater, like, Admiral RoboCop?
Admiral RoboCop. don't mess with me, son.
I was really hoping that they would shoot Admiral RoboCop and then just start screaming, "Does it hurt? Does it hurt?" Yeah. So I mean, we're not trying to be downplaying the show because, like, we're excited for it. It's still a better sci-fi show than most. But I feel like had the Orville not been out. Or even for that, like The Expanse, even, which I've watched a bit of. But if those two shows weren't out, we would probably be giving more praise to this than we are. It's just that other shows are doing it better.
I think part of it is, as we've gotten older, we've become more disconcerting with our tastes, and our expectations are a lot higher, because we have seen what network and cable television networks and streaming services are capable of producing quality shows when they want to. The problem is, because the people involved with this, particularly with the Kurtzman and all them, they're like given a pass because they've done all these big Hollywood movies. So they just assume everything they touch turns into gold, while they don't
Kurtzman,
have
everything Kurtzman touches turns to shit, though, pretty much.
But pretty every much. Studio is like, but it makes us money. And that's the assumption here.
Well, look at Transformers, look at Star Trek. He's ruined all the movies, but
exactly. It's enough to put butts in seats, but it's not enough to keep people clapping.
No.
And that's the problem.
No, because then it just taints the franchise.
And if you look, like, there are, you can, it's shown that you can have a good showrunner and have something turn out really good. Like, look at the visual quality of The Mandalorian. And one that a lot of people forget about is that the Lost in Space remake on Netflix. Better special effects, better budgets. And, like, it doesn't make any sense to me why they wouldn't be throwing everything at Picard.
Especially considering you have, people have wanted a prime timeline since Nemesis, since the reboot, since 2009. We've wanted this, and what they're giving us is what they're telling us we want. Well, they're not listening to us.
And if they are going to do this whole like Star Trek universe thing, where it's like all these different offshoots shows, like you've got the cartoon one coming up,
Below Decks,
and some other stuff.
Lower Decks.
Lower Decks, whatever, yeah.
You know how, like, Tarantino was maybe going to direct a movie? Give him a miniseries in the Star Trek universe on there.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the prime show or anything, but, like, give him a side story. Let him do something strange and weird. You know, like have it pop up and turn out that it's, like, what's this one about? It's not even about Starfleet. It's about, like, an Andorian space freighter that discovers something weird.
Yeah, because, because if anything, stuff like The Mandalorian proves you don't need to have Jedi in Star Wars. You can have a side character as long as it's interesting. And you need visionary and powerful directors to push it forward. You need your Jon Favreau's, your Dave Filoni's to move things forward. You give it to a Tarantino or someone who cares enough about the IP, they'll give you gold, but you have to let them.
Give it, or the dude, I can't remember his name, the one that directed the... Was it Neil Blomkamp, the guy that did District 9?
District 9, yeah.
Give him one about Starfleet Academy and have things get weird.
Yeah, go for it. I mean, I'm surprised we never got that Starfleet Academy series people wanted for years.
There was actually quite a few different series. There was one that was going to be like Final Frontier that took place at a certain time period as well.
Like, Star Trek is so ripe for the use of its IP, which is fantastic. But when you revisit nostalgia and you don't use it properly, you do a disservice to what's happened to it before. I mean, Picard's story ended. Did it need the movies? Probably not, but we're okay with how it ended, right? Now seeing them, just like I said, I want...
People wanted one more movie after Nemesis where it showed him stepping down. Like, people wanted one where it was going to end with his retirement. But we never got it. So instead, we skipped his retirement and went right back to, hey, it's not really Star Trek Picard, it's Star Trek Bucket List. I got one more thing I got to do, is what the show is.
Yeah. Basically, before I lose my mind and I die.
Which is leading me into I talked last time, like, do you think this could all be in his head?
I don't think so, because you know what? The showrunners are not that clever.
Or are they, are they going to just go for the next season or something, snap their fingers, and it's Q that put him in the scenario?
No, because that would piss people off that our legacy. It would force people to go back and rewatch the first season, and that's not a way to welcome new people into that particular storytelling medium.
Plus, it would cause more people to cancel their service.
Exactly. So, but you do bring up an interesting point. Because we have three seasons confirmed of Picard, we will bring up legacy characters like Q, because John DeLancey will do it, because that guy loves doing anything fun and quirky. he was Discord on My Little Pony for like 7 seasons. So, like, seasons, sorry.
Why don't they just really want to spend money? Just let's make a $150 million movie, put it on there just like Netflix does with their $100 million movies. I don't know, cast The Rock so he can play the champion from Voyager, where he's Voyager. Like a, where he's a space MMA wrestler. And you could do an entire movie about that, pay him $150 million, and you'd get like 20 million subscribers for at least a month.
Yeah, you'd make your money back pretty quick.
I mean, Netflix, like they've... CBS,
or even Disney Plus has put money in the money, series. Like,
CBS All Access is going to have to really immensely up the ante, because Netflix is putting out between 6 and 10 $150 million movies a year. They're putting 50 to 100 million per season of their shows.
Yeah.
That's what Disney is doing. That's what I don't think Peacock is. No, wait. Peacock is putting out the Battlestar Galactica show, and they're apparently putting money into that. And then HBO is putting a ton of money into their shows too.
Like Friends. I know they're doing other things like Westworld
and stuff like that. Well, that's the thing. Westworld, it looks 100 times better than this show. Like, there's probably not a better show on TV when it comes. Well, the show is filmed. Certain scenes are filmed completely on film, traditional, just like Game of Thrones was. And then the rest of the stuff is completely rendered in movie quality in 8K and then downsampled for TV. So, like, they're future-proofing their shows. I don't see Picard doing that.
No.
Especially if they're not getting the scale of an old ship proper.
There's problems with this show, and I think maybe the later seasons can adapt to it. and that's always been Star Trek's problem. Star Trek has never had a good first one or two seasons. It takes two seasons to get its footing minimum. Like, there never has been a Star Trek who's like, man, you should really go back and watch the first two seasons. They're really good. Well, except that has original, never happened.
Except well, for
the
original, TNG.
Season three of the original is pretty oof.
But yeah. Well, that's because they ousted Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah, that's true.
TNG season two was good.
It was inconsistent. It had good moments,
but it was good.
It's got about 6 good episodes, and the rest can be skipped.
And they blow up a guy's head, which was great.
Which is season one.
That's
the only episode of season one. Watch the pilot, watch Conspiracy, and that's all that matters.
Anything from season one where it's got Q.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, like 4 or 5 episodes total, including the 2-part pilot. Second season, Measure of a Man, specifically the extended version on the Blu-ray only, because you get an extra 10.
Q-Who.
The finale, and that's it. And there's like, between the first 2 seasons, there's 52 episodes and maybe 10 worth watching. And then from season 3 onward, it's all great, pretty much.
Yeah. They're great one-off stories.
Yeah, and then the same goes for, I still want to do a full watch of DS9. But DS9 probably...
It's rough for the first 2.
But it's probably going to be the one that holds up the best.
Yes, once the Dominion War starts, it's very consistent.
And I actually watched the one with Sisko having the visions of the prophets because he gets zapped by the computer. Where it's basically like they're supposed to enter Bajor into the Federation, and he's like, Locus coming down, destroys Bajor, and he's like, we have to wait, you know, and then basically the Locus were the Jem'Hadar ships, you know, coming down, and so because they stopped, and this was in season 5, like before the whole invasion and war.
I'll say this. In watching that documentary, they bring up the comparison to Babylon 5 and they just ignore it. Simply because DS9 was a copy of Babylon 5 and they got sued for it and lost. So if you haven't, Babylon 5 is a good watch. It's actually in widescreen.
Yeah, it is.
It was filmed in widescreen using 35 millimeter cameras. The CG has aged because that was done in standard def and they lost the computer file, so they can't re-render it to anything higher quality. But other than that, it looks better than everything until Enterprise. And the story, that's a show that had a 5-season story arc that was written from the beginning. They had every season written before the show even began to air. So that's the kind of stuff that they used to do when they made sci-fi shows. They planned that way. I wish that Star Trek would go back to that, planning a few seasons at a time.
Yeah, there needs to be a series Bible in place, not just bank everything on, well, are we going to get picked up next season?
Well, I think that's what they're going to do now. You've got, you know, my closing thoughts, I think, for this episode, because we rambled, is
yeah,
they got two seasons now where they can write 20 episodes, which isn't a lot, but they don't have to write any filler. They now have 30 episodes they can make for Discovery. So, you know, unless they, or actually, no, Discovery is 14 episodes a season, 14 to 15. So they got roughly almost 40 episodes. So they better have a plan for the next three. And then on top of that, we've got the section, whatever show coming out. So
Section 31.
Yeah. So we've got what, a total of maybe, including the cartoons, almost 100 episodes being written over the next little bit. So if they're smart, they'll have their Bible in place, you know, beforehand. And isn't there rumors that they're changing the head writers and the person who's in charge of Star Trek for Paramount?
That was a rumor about a year ago.
They're still keeping last week or the week before.
Yeah, it just keeps resurfacing. What is it? CBS changing head writer. I'm not seeing anything. I'm not seeing anything as far as changing the head writer. I know Michael Chabon is not going to be sticking around for season two of Picard.
Good. And they oust the last, they've gone through two, or is it, no, it's three, head writers for and showrunners for Discovery already. One for season one, and they replaced the season two person halfway through, and the second person that was hired on is now left too.
So it's probably because people have to deal with Kurtzman.
That's what it sounds like, because it doesn't sound like they're, and they said the studio, they're going over budget on all their episodes. Well, that's on the executive producer, not the director. The director gets the scenes. The executive producer puts the money together and gets the budget approved. So that's on Kurtzman if he keeps going over budget. But then they're blaming the head showrunner. Nah, it's Kurtzman.
I bet they're wishing that they gave this stuff to J.J. Abrams, you know, back when he first did the 2009 movie.
Except that he's terrible at everything he does.
He is. And I don't get everybody's love for him, to be honest.
No. The only person,
Abrams.
Yeah, he's bullshit. He's a nostalgia leech that just basically plays on people's nostalgia and redoes the same movie tropes over and over again.
Pretty much.
I can't think of much of his. I you know what? I will say this. I do like his first Star Trek movie. I do like that, and I liked some of his TV stuff. But that's pretty much about it. Anything he's done super theatrical, I'm like, okay.
Mission Impossible 3 was tolerable. It was better than the second one.
Force Awakens was okay. It wasn't great.
It was a rehash.
Yeah, it was a rehash.
Everything he does is a rehash. Even like Super 8 is just, oh, let's capture your nostalgia for movies like this. His idea for Cloverfield, wasn't that, did he direct that or did he produce that? Can't remember.
I don't remember. But I think he directed.
I think he directed it.
But it's like, oh, let's do Blair Witch, but Godzilla. Like, he doesn't have any original ideas, even for the stories he does get. So he's the definition of a TV director who happened to get a chance and somehow made it big. He's not good enough to be a theatrical director. He just, I don't know. And you see him and he was apologizing for issues with Star Wars. Yeah, you know what? You wouldn't have had to apologize if you had enough clout to have made it the way you wanted to make it. Half of the directors of these larger movies have enough clout that they can get the movie done the way they want. So obviously, there wasn't enough faith in him to get it done by the higher-ups, but then they still try to praise him as being some visionary genius.
Well, he's only got a 5-year deal with CBS to more or less expand the Star Trek franchise, and it was signed in June of 2018, so we've only got three more years of him.
Every show that he produces for TV generally has a good pilot, and then everything else is garbage, and they last a few years and fizzle out. So as you know, I'm not trying to, you know, blame him, but if you wanted to get somebody who is still working in the industry and is successful, half of the Star Trek people are dead. The rest, like 90% of the rest of the people are now working for the Orville that were either involved in producing or writing. The only person that hasn't popped up is Ron Moore. And that's because he's highly successful in what he's doing. He's got, I think, is it 3 or 4 shows on TV right now? He makes the, what's that called? Outlander, the time travel women's show, where it's like the girl goes back in time from the 40s to like the 1700s. That's on its like 5th season. He has that show on Apple TV that got renewed for two or three seasons. The
Momoa show?
No. His show is the really good one. The one about the moon landing. What if the Russians landed on the moon first?
Oh, okay.
That has a super high budget. It's really good. And he's the head writer and producer of that. And then he's got like 2 other ones, I think, in production. He's also the guy that was one of the head writers for DS9 and showrunners there. He's the guy that reinvented Battlestar Galactica, made it probably the most popular sci-fi show of the 2000s other than Stargate.
Yep.
Here's a question. Why not hire some of the Stargate people? They're not working on anything.
Yeah.
You want to have people that know how to run a franchise for longer than Star Trek did? Have them. They had the same showrunners for...
I think a lot of them are working on the CBS All Access Twilight Zone, because I know a lot of them, I know some Stargate people and X-Files people work on Twilight Zone.
It was the same producers and writers that wrote a total of 17 seasons of TV. And they wrote some of those seasons concurrently, where they're like writing for 2 different shows at once. So like, these are people that know what they're doing, and yet they have nothing to do with them. It's all, everything with these shows are all part of the Abrams verse of all of his people that he hires for everything.
Mm-hmm.
These producers that are producing these shows, these are people that were his junior producers on his movies. And they now, he's like, here, you've been suckling up my teat long enough. You can now have your own show.
Yeah. What's even funnier, Rod Roddenberry, the son of Gene Roddenberry, you know, he's just riding this out anyway, but he's got Roddenberry Entertainment, but he's an executive producer on Discovery, the Short Treks, Picard, and Lower Decks. And he's had like, he was a production assistant on TNG for like a minuscule amount. And really, that's pretty much all he's done.
Yeah, like, I'm just looking at Ron Moore. He's probably the best choice to do this. He doesn't seem to have any issues with him because he came by to do that documentary on DS9. But, like, the shows he's made since he left, the dude was, what did he do here? He produced 77 episodes of Next Gen, 128 episodes of Deep Space Nine, 2 episodes of Voyager. He created the show Roswell, Carnival, Battlestar Galactica, its spinoffs, Caprica, Helix, ran for 2 seasons. Electric Dreams, which is like a Twilight Zone show that ran for, what was it, 1 season? Outlander's now in its 5th season, For All Mankind. Like, why aren't they getting people like that? Unless they, like, it's almost like they want to get people dirt cheap and have them only work on the one show. When a lot of the people that were working for Star Trek traditionally, they're working for multiple shows.
Yeah, I don't get it, but yeah, I think we've dragged this topic into the ground as far as we can take it at this point. Hopefully the last 4 episodes, when we recap those, are better than what we've been handed so far.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, for sure.
So any other thoughts before we close this out?
I guess as a final closing thought from me is, do better, Picard, because you are capable of it. I just think you need to let go of nostalgia. You need to get more cohesive. And don't be afraid to take a risk in the right direction. And what do I mean by that? Very, very, very briefly. Give me a reason to care. Don't just randomly kill characters because it'll make you edgy and make you gritty. Give me an emotional payoff. Like Alex talked about killing Janeway, that would be an emotional payoff if you did it correctly, and it would give someone a graceful out of the franchise. If you want that to build up season two, cool, do that. But you got to start now.
I totally agree.
Same. It's, and you know, not just saying do better, but think about your plot before you write it. Don't just write. Don't. They seem to be looking at each episode individually. They're right. Oh, here's the thing. Write, if you're going to do a serial show, write it as a serial. But the problem is they're changing writers for every episode almost. So they're writing like they're writing their episode only. When if you're going to have a serialized show, you should have the plot written out ahead of time. And then you bring your writers in to fill in the blanks.
Totally. So for this episode of Future Imperfect, we have been...
Mike the Birdman Dodd.
Alex.
And... Captain Phillips here. So until next time, live long and prosper.